He didn't invent the quarterback.
How are you doing?
But he did invent quarterback tears. Here's our NFL insider, Mike Sando of The Athletic, on the program.
Yes, indeed. Let's talk some NFL football. Mike Sando is our NFL insider. He's the senior NFL writer for The Athletic. He's brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks, twinpeaksrestaurant.com. If you want to check them out online, if you want to check out a 29-degree man-sized draft beer, then you get on over to Twin Peaks right now and enjoy some happy hour. What the hell are you waiting on, for crying out loud? Take advantage of it. You can not only get that, you can get the premium cocktail served over ice balls. While you're there, pick up a gift card, give the gift of Twin Peaks. You could do that. In fact, you can get a bonus card as well. That's right. Take a break at Twin Peaks and bring the crew for the holiday celebration. If you need some last minute gifts, grab a Twin Peaks gift card in store now through the 24th. That's Christmas Eve, by the way, people. Score a bonus card for yourself. That'll be valid in January. It's at Twin Peaks. Find out more details at twinpeaksrestaurant.com. All kinds of great events going on this month, so go check it out at Twin Peaks. We welcome Mike Sando to the festivities. Mike, how are you, my friend?
Doing well, thank you.
Let's get Dan Snyder out of the way. This is one of the bigger stories that's out there, information coming out from the, which is amazing. I guess it's not amazing. I find it amazing from my viewpoint of the world 5 or 6 or 10 years ago, but certainly expected has been politicized, Dan Snyder and the congressional investigation, which, you know, is, I'm not going to go down that road, but we're at least getting information about him. He's denying it all, but about the things that are going on. And I could care less. I don't know how Dan Snyder could get more in the gutter than he is right now. But I think, isn't the story on this, what's happening here is the NFL is kind of getting thrown under the bus, that they're being shown as a good old boy network that's going to circle the wagons around the owners, and owner on owner, you know, I don't want to say crime would be the old joke, but owner on owner action is not going to be taken. They're going to protect their own at all costs, no matter how bad it looks for the league.
For the most part, that's what they've done. Yes, I do think that we are near the end of Dan Snyder owning the team, which will be great for the league and that franchise and all the fans. And you know, but you are only as good as your people that are either on your team or. Hold on a second here. My phone's trying to talk to me. I don't want that to happen. Wow, that's really good, Sando. Jeez.
You're all right, buddy. Listen, we have dealt with. You can go ahead and get a turn. You're all right. I can fill for a few seconds for you.
We have dealt with babies
crying on guests' shoulders, dogs barking. Hell, Adam Teicher's dog barks about every other
Curtis
time
crying
we have
on baby
on,
shoulders.
A guy being pulled over for speeding.
Doug Gottlieb got out of a ticket while he was on the air with us.
What's the worst thing that happened to Glauber? I just want to know, because we go back and forth a lot still.
Glauber had Joe Morris come up to him. He was sitting outside the Giants stadium. This is at least one I can remember off the top of my head. And I guess Joe Morris came up and started talking to him and seemed to be oblivious to the fact that he had a phone on the side of his head. So that was
kind
of
good. Funny. That's good. Yeah. I thought I was doing a salad here. I was turning off my phone, but then my little Bluetooth speaker was like, "Phone disconnected." Hey, that's not what I wanted to do. So anyway, it's a new thing. You know, I like the gadgets. Yeah. I got gadgets all over. This is a newer one. But Dan Snyder, what I was saying is, you're only as good as the people in your organization. What's really interesting about this is, you know, the revelation that, you know, he possibly was the one who put out the Gruden emails, and then.
Right.
What else has he done, right? There's been other stuff that's come out lately, certainly the Jerry Jones stuff, the photo and all of that. Your imagination really might not even be able to encapsulate what actually has happened, right? And we've seen these terrible dealings behind the scenes with the cheerleader photo shoots, just sleazy, bad stuff. And so, you know, the league and the organization are kind of in this spot where only when they had to have they now tried to clean up the culture there. And I do believe that it's probably better. You know, there's some better people in there, certainly in leadership positions. But it's not – you can't get the stain out of the rug until you get a new rug. And so I think that's really what it is. And this is the old rug there. And, you know, they've cleaned it and, you know, used the stain removers. But it's still there. they got to get rid of it. And once they do, I think it'll be just a great thing for everybody. We don't have to even talk about this stuff.
Yeah, I'd encourage people to read it. You know, there are a number of stories out there, but, you know, it details everything from, like, one, like, during the protest, kneeling during the anthem, Dan Snyder was having Roger Goodell is alleged to have told people that he was hiring private investigators to follow Roger Goodell to try to get dirt on him, to get rid of him. Investigators, I wouldn't even just say following Bruce Allen, who was the guy who had the emails back and forth with John Gruden and everything, but like going up and talking to him, like they weren't hiding anywhere. They were out front and making it clear that, and following his wife, and you know they're being alleged and accused of harassing people. Him harassing people by using investigators that are right there and saying, "I'm here, I'm following you, I'm from the Washington football team, this is what I'm doing." And then it goes on to kind of sum it all up and talk about that. You know, some of the other things that are going on that are not looking good for the league. And did I read this right? I didn't even realize this. That one of the things that points out is the Cowboys executive that got fired that was, you know, apparently taping the Cowboys cheerleaders.
Dalrymple.
But even said he had a camera under the dress of Jerry Jones' daughter. I mean, like, it's unreal, like the stuff. So it's strap yourself in. It's a wild ride if you read all this stuff that's there. But I agree with you. I think it's coming to an end with Dan Snyder.
Just
imagine
the debauchery, the levels that are attainable when you have wealth and unaccountability. Just, the levels of debauchery that are attainable at the frat house at the state college are really bad. But just think what these guys can do.
Yeah.
Think what these guys can do with their resources, and they're not used to being accountable at all.
Yeah.
You can't even get to them. Like the media can't even ask them questions.
Yes, that's and I think that's why I could never figure out why the FBI was investigating college basketball. You know, I get where it's like, well, why are taxpayer dollars worrying about the NFL? And I get it. I think that's a reasonable question to ask, but I think it's if you've got these titans of industry, aristocracy of the United States that are able to come together and run their business and run their businesses while trampling on, to some degree, human rights, right? If you're videotaping women when they're changing and things like that, you know, if you're allowed to do that with no checks or balances, that's a problem. And I think that's the bigger picture. Now it all has to be proven and all that. But those are the allegations. And the NFL has not been transparent at all. Their own investigation has been kept in house, and they said they're not going to release it. They didn't release it. So I think it's I don't think we can get our arms around it here in a 5-minute conversation, certainly. But it's something I would encourage people to read. And there is a reason why I think, you know, all of us have to be expected to act like human beings and abide by laws in this country. And I think that's kind of what this is getting at, that there's a protective shell amongst these owners. And, you know,
it's going away because more people have direct access to getting the word out when something bad happens. There's much more chance for accountability now. In the day, no one's going to believe. Things could just easily be quashed. You know, the owner, people would be afraid of them. Now you have much more of people that will go to media or social media, get their word out, they're believed. And we've seen a level of accountability that's totally different. The John Gruden emails that came out, if those came out 20 years ago, he wouldn't have lost his job.
Right.
My opinion. Now gone in a week. So, it is, things are changing, and that's why we're having this conversation about Dan Snyder, because people came out and talked, and then you can't get away from it. It doesn't just go away or only appear in the newspaper in Washington, D.C., and no one else sees it. No, everyone's talking about it all the time. You can't get away.
Yeah, it's a great point. We're talking about Mike Sando, our NFL insider here in the program. Here's a guy who's fired. Another one that's a bit of a head scratcher. I think for everybody else, we just see it as a good old fashioned power struggle, and one that John Robinson, the general manager of the Tennessee Titans, clearly lost. I mean, that, like, we can get all excited and quote all his records and this and that, and you can say, well, he missed on this draft pick and he missed on that one, and point out, well, he hit this one, he hit that one, and this is their record. Mike Vrabel and him didn't get along, and they chose the coach over the general manager. Do we really have to make it as cloak and dagger, or do we have to say, hey, listen, can't everybody in the room be an adult and be like, listen, we have differences of opinion. We made the decision that we think is best for the organization, and we wish John the best.
Yeah, I do think it is. Obviously, Vrabel comes away with more power, and that's the story. You know, you always wonder initially, was there some incident or some reason that someone would be terminated? But, you know, in the absence of that, it is what it is, right? And Vrabel has a big profile. He's a big personality. He's had success as a coach. I think the general impression around the league has been that, you know, they have just done okay or not okay in personnel, and they've won because of the coach. But careful what you wish for also, right? So
right.
We'll see how well it works out for them in the future and who else they hire, and it just becomes a Vrabel-only organization. But clearly he's the one who's going to have more consolidated power, and that can work. If you got the right people, shoot. Kansas City's got a pretty powerful head coach. I live in the Seattle area. Pete Carroll's in charge, but they have partnerships with other people, you know, who do who are chosen by them now. Pete Carroll chose John Schneider. Andy Reid obviously had a lot to do with Brett Veach being the GM, and that can work. You just have to have the right people.
Yeah, can he find his Brett Veach? And that's what I'm curious. What are your – Mike Vrabel's done a lot of things. I'm always impressed by him. I'm a big fan of his, and I don't know what went on. So, like I said, big boy jobs come with big boy consequences, and I'm happy to, you know, just move on down the road if it's just a difference of football opinions. That's why, like I said, I don't understand why they can't just frame it that way. But what do you think? I love what you said there. Be careful what you wish for. You know, now it's on you, right? We've seen coaches get that power and not be able to wield it correctly. Bill Belichick got it. He wielded it correctly, at least all the time that he had Tom Brady as his quarterback. He seemed to be able to wield it correctly. What does your gut tell you how this works with Mike Vrabel now?
I think it's pretty risky. You know, I do think that he has done a good job in hiring, and I know from listening to him talk about his hiring strategy when it came to head coaches, one of the things I was very impressed with was that he made an effort consciously to not hire his friends. And he's explained this in the past, that Larry Izzo and Wes Welker were two of his closest friends, and they're both in coaching. And that he had told them explicitly when he got the Tennessee job, he didn't think the fit was right. And so I do applaud him to the extent that was true, because I think it's tempting and natural to just get the people you're comfortable with and pay your friends. And some of them may be great at what they do, but some of them may not be. And your staff can, you know, suffer when you get the guys that are just there because they know you. So he's done a good job with that at this level. How does that work? You know, I think it really remains to be seen. It's not like he has that long of a track record in even coaching, let alone management and that sort of thing. There's so many things that go into a job like a general manager that had nothing to do with your draft picks, right? I mean, you're constantly dealing with the personalities in the building and fires that need to be put out, and dealing with the owner and communicating messages and all of those things that I think a general manager's job is now. It's not just going on the road and disappearing and watching the film and then picking the players at the draft and talking twice a year, right? So is what makes us think Mike Vrabel is going to be great at setting up the proper structure? I don't know. Maybe he will. He's been a pretty darn good head coach, and we weren't sure about that either. He'd been a coordinator for 1 year in Houston, and they were ranked near the bottom of the league. So I guess we'll find out.
He's the guy that kind of proves that, like, the coordinating and Hackett does too. Coordinating and head coaching are different, right? Like, it's the natural stepping stone, but being good at one doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be good at the other, because for the exact reason you just said on Mike Vrabel, he clearly gets the head coaching part of the equation. Who knows if he'd had 10 years as a coordinator if they had ever been good. We're talking to Mike Sando here in the program. Now, Von Miller, done for the year. I don't get what the cloak and dagger thing about. He's hurt. He's not hurt. You know what that was all about, but at the end of the day, he's hurt. He's done for the year. How much does this damage the Bills' chances to win it all?
Yeah, I think it does. You know, I think it's look, they were very close last year to being in the championship game without him. So they're still a great contender, and they're one of the two or three teams that you think could go to the Super Bowl. but that was a big move to get over the top, and he played a big role for the Rams. He was going to help them close out games. So I don't know how you could say this is not a big deal to lose, you know, a truly, at his best, an elite pass rusher, somebody you really have to have a game plan consideration for. So, yeah, big bummer for them. It was a risk. You know, I think we knew this was the risk. Was it a bad move because it didn't work out right? I mean, look, if you want to say this is a risk you took and you lost, that's fine. I sort of admire teams that are close and try to make a push to get over the top. We've certainly seen many times over the years somebody pick up a pass rusher and help get him over the top. But I think the issue they had to get Von Miller there that was the biggest risk was they guaranteed money into the third year. So
yeah,
that is a little bit problematic, but it's a big swing, and you know, you don't hit all the big swings. So at least they picked up a guy who was a proven Super Bowl difference maker 6 months before.
Yeah, and he helped get them to the point to where they're now the number one seed, so he contributed to that. If they can hold on and go the rest of the way, we'll find out. Part of it is, you know, if they would go on to win the championship, they'll view the next years and whatever it does cap-wise to them, they'll be like, hey, it'll be like the Rams right now. They're terrible, and everyone's like, yeah, but we got that Super Bowl championship. Now, that'll change in the future. But, you know, I mean, I think it'd be pretty easy to view it if they are able, and they were good enough to win it without him last year, and they're, I think, still good enough to win it now. It'll be viewed as he's the guy that got him over the hump till they got Tre'Davious White back. And, you know, he helped them win without him, and now White will help them win without Von Miller. That, you know, if they're able to go, that'll be the story that gets written. Can the 49ers make it happen with Brock Purdy for, you know, it through it, like what right now on paper looks like through a wild card round?
I think they can still win that division. You know, I think the other teams, obviously Arizona and the Rams, are not very good. I think Seattle's still flawed enough that I still think the 49ers probably beat Seattle. That's in a couple weeks, and it's going to be a big game. I think it's a night game in Seattle, so that'll tell us a lot. But I do give the 49ers a good chance, probably a strong favorite chance to still win the division. I think they're a good team, but I think this really hurts them the longer they have to go. And in the playoffs, look, if they couldn't quite get over the hump with Jimmy Garoppolo, who's a good professional quarterback, I don't see how that Brock Purdy is going to be as good. Even if he's better than expected, he's not going to be as good. So big bummer for them. I know they're holding out some hope, outside chance that Jimmy Garoppolo could return during the playoffs. I think that's important for them to have that light at the end of the tunnel and not rule it out just for their team, who's really invested in Jimmy right now. Emotionally, he's you know, become a real leader for that team, but I think it really makes me say they're not going to the Super Bowl.
Do we have to admit that the Cincinnati Bengals own the Kansas City Chiefs?
Well, I think the margin for error against them is small, and I think the Chiefs are used to having a big margin for error against almost all the teams they play, so that even when it's not their best day, they win the game. And I think Cincinnati is now a team that has a tier one quarterback. You might say Mahomes is better, but this guy is really good. They have their version of a Tyreek Hill type player on the outside, and they have a very nicely coordinated defense with a pretty good, I think, defensive culture on that side of the ball. Randy Mueller and I talked about this on our podcast, and Randy said really the way you can tell buy-in on defense is how the secondary tackles. And when you watch Cincinnati, you see it. And so they have a decent thing going. I think Lou Anarumo has been a nice surprise on that side of the ball. And they're still operating with the quarterback cheap, too. So that's a real big advantage to have one of those tier one guys, and you haven't been paying huge money. So, and same with their number one receiver. So that gives them they're in a pretty good spot. I think you have to tip your cap to them. I don't know about owning. You know, they've beaten them three times, and that's really hard to do. But if you look at, I was looking at this, since the start of last season, I took all of the games that the Bengals have had and ranked them statistically from their best to worst games on defense, okay? The two worst Cincinnati defensive games of the last 2 years are both against the Chiefs, and one of them was this one that they lost the game in. So I think you've got... you know, that says something. It's not like they just have the answer to Patrick Mahomes, even though he obviously had the bad end of half last season. These are close, relatively high-scoring games, both offenses faring pretty well, and a play here or there, Kelce fumble, whatever, is enough to swing it. And the Chiefs just aren't used to that because they're used to being 20% better than somebody instead of 10% better. Now that you're 10%, a 5% play here or there, you lose by three. And I think that's that's what's happened.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that, a 5% play here or there. I agree. And it's, you know, if it were one game, if they had not played the Bengals at all last year and this game went down, you'd be like, we're unlucky. Sucks. You know, great play by the defense to rip the ball out. But, and, you know, Bucker's 71% from 50-plus. He misses the 55-yarder. Call it 60% from 55-plus. I don't know. I'd have to go look at where it is on there. But, you know, hey, it'd be real easy to hang your hat on, you know what, just not our day, but we're still better. Three times, one calendar year. Close games, Bengals have won it. And so that's where I come back to, listen, everybody gets old. And I'm not saying he is. He's age-wise, age is just a number. Bill Belichick was, I think, had two more Super Bowls to win when he was Andy Reid's age right now. You know, so I'm not saying
he's done. You're using the A word with Coach Reid here.
Listen, we always like to be proactive here on the program and not just reactive. Every jackass, after a guy's gone 4-12 and 4-12 will tell you he doesn't have it anymore.
These guys lost Tyreek Hill. We were just celebrating him a month ago now. A little bit too old, getting up there.
No. I'm just saying there comes a new wave. Andy Reid was the new wave in 1999 when he was slinging it all over the yard, and they're like, why aren't you running it?
Because they've got a seven red wave. He didn't go anywhere.
Listen, but hear me out. Okay. He took the 55-yard field goal try instead of going for it on 4th-and-7. Last year, he wouldn't let the Bengals score. They burned the clock out on him last year in the regular season game, just like they did in this year's game. There are new school ideas that, you know, I know Brandon Staley is the poster child for all the old school guys to go, look how it doesn't work. People should look a little closer at what Zach Taylor's doing. He goes for it on 4th down. He hangs onto the ball. He doesn't give it back to Patrick Mahomes. He doesn't blitz Patrick Mahomes because he destroys it. He drops 8, something that nobody used to ever do. And he does it all the time. Meanwhile, Steve Spagnuolo's idea is to blitz more and more and more and more and never drops 8, which is what everybody else is doing. And they're giving Patrick Mahomes some problems doing it. I mean, you know, I think it's an important time for them to look in the mirror.
Yeah, I got you. But you're not trading Andy Reid and Spags for Zach Taylor and Lou Anarumo right now and thinking that you think the Chiefs would be better or no?
Well, I think if I said yes, people would lose their mind and I would run the risk of harming some relationships at Arrowhead. So I will need more information. So. But I will offer this. Let me offer this. Yeah. I will offer that I can see a scenario where 2 or 3 years from now or 4 or 5 years from now, we will look back and say that was a no-brainer. Zach Taylor is the rocket ship taking off. Nobody jumped on Andy Reid early on, right? Like, you know, if Zach Taylor doesn't win a Super Bowl, then the answer is going to be no. Right? Like, it's not, because he needs to get one in the next 3 or 4 years, because Andy Reid got one in his second year once he got his Hall of Fame quarterback. He had good quarterbacks, but once he got his Hall of Famer, he got a championship. Zach Taylor got there. He didn't win, but I mean, I think that's the thing, is like, we're so preconditioned. Like, I spent all this time saying Andy, you know, people used to crap on Andy Reid's clock management. He just didn't have a great quarterback, right? But now there are some ever-evolving new ways of doing things, and I still think he's really good clock management when he just gives the ball to Patrick Mahomes. But his defense hadn't stopped since he all day. They'd given up at least 52 yards on every possession except for one in that game, and there were 3 minutes left to go, and he gave the football back to him.
Yep. And so here's what I see with these two teams. They're both good and highly capable on offense, and the Bengals are just 50% better on defense. That's the difference in the teams right now.
Okay.
And when you look at the Chiefs have had 5 bad games on defense. They were against the teams that had Joe Burrow, Tom Brady, Justin Herbert, Josh Allen, and maybe surprisingly Derek Carr. Okay. They have had 3 good games on defense. Malik Willis, Matt Ryan, and John Wolford. Okay. So that is welcome to the world of a bottom 10 defense. That's what they are. They're not as historically bad as they have been at certain stretches, but they are not a good defense. And so the test for Cincinnati will be the same. when they have to start paying their quarterback and paying these other guys, then they're not going to be probably in the top 10 on defense, and they're going to be holding on. So all of those game management things, they may be good points. We don't know for sure if they're great or bad points because we don't know all the things that are going into it. I think Andy Reid would embarrass both of us if we tried to talk about the scenarios of what they were thinking on third or fourth and one. I don't necessarily think he's stuck in some, you know, 1985, 2005 time work necessarily. It's worth looking at. But that's what you talk about when you're in the close games now. You're not in the games like you normally are for the Chiefs. So we're going to now get into what, we should have done this. We shouldn't have punted. We should have done that. There's been other times they've made aggressive plays on fourth down, haven't there? I mean, I can look at it. I can study it. I can pull it all up. I didn't know we were going to talk about it today, but I haven't perceived them to just be completely out of it with those.
No, he's willing, and he went for fourth downs in this game. I mean, that's what makes this one kind of puzzling. And listen, I will defend. I'm very much, you know, pro fourth down, go for it on fourth down, team go for it on fourth down. The idea that there's never a time to not, I think is foolish because I've always said, you look down at that play sheet, if you don't have a play you like and you're going for it just because statistically it says to do it, that's dumb, right? So there's absolutely, I'm with you, 100%. There's a lot more that goes into it. But he was going for it on fourth downs earlier. Now, the one thing is, Mahomes, there are a lot of factors, and we could spend honestly 5 hours breaking it down, and he doesn't get 5 hours. He has about 2 seconds to decide because he's got to get his field goal unit out there because he doesn't want to burn a timeout, and they kicked it with 7 seconds to go on the clock. Did they rush it? I don't know. I don't think so. I think it looked like it was in rhythm and everything. There's so many nuances that go into it. You're absolutely right. But I do know this, like when Andy Reid's winning and people are saying he's lucky, I don't have time for that. And so when Andy Reid's losing, I ain't got time to hear he's unlucky either, right? And so he's 0-for-3 against Zach Taylor, and he's 1-for-3 with a brilliant 13-second comeback in the AFC Championship game against the Bills in the last year. Those are the top two teams they got to face, and they are 1-5 against them. That's not a coincidence.
So I've got a thing here I just called up. So when you look at go for it on fourth down, I filter out all the times you're behind and late in the game, right? I mean, who cares? Everyone's going to go for it when you're desperate, right?
Agreed. Right?
So I just called this up. So what rate do you go for it on fourth down when the score is either tied or you're leading? Isn't that kind of what we're talking about?
Well, they were down three.
What we're talking about?
In this case,
okay,
they were down three.
Let's make it down three or no worse than that, okay?
Yep.
So Kansas City has a 19.6 go for it rate. That's the sixth highest in the league, and 11% is the league average. Now, obviously, it matters if it's fourth and 17.
Right.
But you know,
it would have been fourth and seven.
I'll do fourth and seven or less. This is the added value you get with Sando as your national guy.
That's right.
Here today. So fourth and seven or less. And we're either trailing by three or no more than that. We could be ahead or trailing by no more than three. So the go-for-it rate is 19% in the league this year, and the Chiefs have the ninth highest. They're at 24%. They have 8 go-for-its, and they're 7 of 8 converting them. So they must have a pretty good plan on their plays on those. That's not bad. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, it doesn't prove a ton. If you look at their productivity on those plays, they are third in the league, just in terms of the, you know, points added, I guess, on that. So,
I think it's worth looking at.
I'll do a little homework on the Chiefs on this.
Okay.
I'll be ready for you.
Okay.
I like
because like I know like on just like the Pro Football Reference, I think that was mm-hmm. one of them. It was a 3%. He took 3% off his chances of winning by making the call.
Yeah, I can get that.
And that's actually a pretty big chunk, you know, to do it. Now, listen, again, they had gone for it several times. If he's looking at the play sheet, it's empty. That's a viable reason, right? It's a viable reason go for it.
Here's what I say, though, about that. And I've been into analytics, and I'm interested in it longer than a lot of people in media. When ESPN launched Total QBR, remember ESPN came out with Total QBR 10 or 12 years ago?
Yep.
They called me in and said, would you be the guy to write about it and explain it? I've been dealing with the stats and information people at ESPN for 10 years. I'm totally into all this stuff. I know lots of analytics directors. I do lots of research projects. And to me, 3%, what does that mean? If I come up with a model and my model is 3% different from your model, what does it mean? Do you think the models are, what's the margin for error on a model? That's my big issue with the models, is like the Chiefs may have their own model that they've done in-house, and it may show that they left 10% or that they gained 3%, right? It's not like there's some model that everyone agrees on that takes into account exactly what's happening after we gained all the information we got in this game about, you know what, the freaking nose tackle's killing our center or whatever, you know what I mean, or whatever's going on in the game. So I don't, like a lot of those things that drive me crazy. They squandered 1.8% win probability. Like really? That's enough? Like, what is enough to where it's egregious?
Agreed. I agree with you. 3% actually is pretty big that late in the game. But to your point, you know, for one play, on one play for to mean 3%, right? Like that is a fairly big number. But I agree with every single word, and I've had those arguments with my buddy Eric Eager and other guys. I think what makes this one pop is the eye test of the rest of the game. They were not forcing Cincy to punt ever. They were going up and down the field. There was no reason. To your point, you called them a bottom third defense. There's no reason when you've got a $500 million quarterback that everybody agrees is the best to not put the ball in his hand and to put it in the hand of what is, according to one very informed, intelligent football mind, a bottom third defense, put it on them. That's where I think, you know, I think you first go, really, is this the right thing? Then you go look at everything else. But the eye test on that game said, and the eye test on the last calendar year, this is the third game against the Bengals, that in these spots, you're not getting the ball back. That's why I think it comes to that. Again, I'm not saying I don't want Andy Reid gone. I'm not trying to fire Andy Reid. I think he's a brilliant coach. I just want him to look in the mirror and make sure he's open to every possibility.
Yep, absolutely. So I'm very interested in this. I'm going to watch it. I'm gonna brush up on it. And I'll even pull a couple guys who do this sort of thing. I love the discussions and debate over it. I sort of default sometimes to the side of, I do a little bit default to the side of the teams sometimes because I just get tired of everybody saying,
I agree,
citing some model, you know. But
I agree.
In general principle, we have Mahomes. I want to bet on Mahomes.
Right.
And
right.
Those numbers that I showed you of my trailing by only a little bit or leading and 4th and 7 or less showed that they do. And not only do they go for it at a higher rate than the rest of the league significantly, they get almost all of them. Now, the fact that they get almost all of them could be a reason to do it even more, right?
Yeah.
You know, you've had a really high success rate. Now, what was the distance again on it, on the play?
4th and 7 it would have been.
That is hard. That's totally different than the realm of most 4th downs for everybody. And so we've seen some real, like you mentioned Eric Eager, he would call Belichick absolutely crazy for that game against Indy when didn't they have a 4th and goal from the 7 or something, and late in the game, and they're down by like 10, and they kicked the field goal, you know. And but the success rate on a 4th and 7 is a totally different animal because almost no one goes for it on 4th and 7 unless you're in desperation. That's a hard one to get. So interesting. It is interesting. Yeah. I would love that. That's one where if the numbers said you should, that could be hard for Andy Reid to believe, right?
Yeah.
That could be hard. The feel, because he probably knows, maybe he knows too much how hard it is to get that.
When
it's 4th and 7, it's very, go ahead. Yeah, I want to hear what you say.
Well, I think the other thing that adds to it is that, you know, we cover Andy Reid every week, and he's always prepared to divert, distract, and not answer. Sometimes we dig in and we get some some good stuff if you can take it to where he doesn't think there's any way it's going to be used against anyone on the team, or divulge the game plan in any way. And he was overly protective on all that. But we also know what it looks like when Andy kind of doesn't like what he's saying, kind of ain't believing his own BS. And what the most glaring example was 4 or 5 days on the Zoom chasing him down about whether or not he actually was considering letting the Bengals score last year, which was a giant thing. And he went into that mode again this year. I mean, just and that's what lends credence to it, is that it seems like he probably after the fact was like, damn it, you know, that probably wasn't the way to go.
I bet you that you're right. There was a debate in his mind, you know, and I'm just looking. So since they've had Pat Mahomes, they've gone for it on 4th and 7 three times. This is why you have a model and a decision to take the memories of painful plays out of your mind. So here's the 4th and 7. Mahomes, 2020 against the Raiders, deep middle intercepted.
Okay.
They had the fake field goal against Tennessee in 2019. So they had 2 out of 4th and 7 go for it that were in punt or field goal formation. And that was the aborted one that was fumbled against Tennessee. Remember that one in 2019? And he threw incomplete. So they've had, like, it's interesting. Andy Reid probably remembers all the 4th and 7s. And
right.
If he does, and he remembers he's scarred from the interception and the fumble and all of that. I'm not saying he does, but sometimes those things play in your mind and make you make a decision. And that's why you actually do have a chart and a model, so that you take the decision out of your bad memories, right? Because every coach remembers the one time. I remember when I was covering Mike Holmgren years ago, like, he didn't do the shotgun much, and he explained that, like, Bill Walsh never did the shotgun because they had, like, a fumbled snap one time. Like, how dumb is that? Bill Walsh is a genius, right?
Right,
but, like,
right.
You remember that one time, and so that would be an interesting thing for Andy Reid's book. You know, when you sit down to collaborate on him, I know you're tight with Andy. You get that book with Andy Reid when he's retired. I would love to know, though, those types of things, like,
yep.
What was really behind that play where he says, you know what, I should have done it, you know, but we screwed up 2 out of 4th and 7, but I just couldn't do it, you know, or whatever.
Yeah,
it's just interesting
it'll have to be
really
when he's
playing your mind. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll have to be when he's done. Coach, I just want to be clear. So you looked it up, and 4th and 7, Reid with Mahomes. He's had it three times. One time he went for it. One was a fake punt, so we take that off the board. The other two times, Mahomes threw incomplete and threw an interception.
Well, so I see one of three. No, so one of them was from a punt formation. Townsend pass short left to Kemp. Is that against the Raiders in 2021?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
And then there's Mahomes against the Raiders in 2020, where he throws to Kelce and he's intercepted by Heath. Okay.
Okay.
And then we have 2019 against Tennessee, where it's the field goal formation, Colquitt aborted play, Winchester fumbles, recover. Oh wait.
Okay.
That one is actually recovered by Colquitt, throws incomplete.
Okay, so it's a
penalty
on
Colquitt for intentional grounding.
That they throw.
Muff with grounding. So this is these probably didn't. Shoot, maybe you should have been going for it on 4th and 7 because you had a disaster on a punt, on a field goal on a punt. I don't know.
Yeah, right there you see that. Like, you know, that is interesting though. But
yeah.
So the only time they actually attempted it, Patrick Mahomes threw an interception.
Throw an interception on 4th and 7. So, you know,
okay.
I don't
That's
know.
That's great stuff. That is great stuff. I mean,
but he knows
to know that.
He's playing against this defense. So he's also in this game. Maybe he's, you know, maybe he knows what down and distance where Anarumo's kind of got him by either scheme or where they're really disciplined at, right? Is there certain ways you beat certain defenses, and he feels like these guys are so fundamentally sound, it's just we're not going to get him on this. If I'm going against somebody who's going to dial up some kind of weird blitz or something, we got him.
Yeah.
I got just the play for that. I can give Pat two options, and this one of these two is going to get it. But since he is pretty sound, like if you remember last year they played Lamar Jackson, they had a great plan for Lamar Jackson. Like, they made the game really hard for them. So I think they do a lot. I think they really, like I was saying, they're bought in defensively, and they may, you know, they may not be the team you want to go for. He probably didn't feel good about going
for it. I'm sure. Mike, I've gone way too long, and they're yelling at me to break, so I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
You are the absolute best, dude. That is awesome stuff. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for the time, brother, and we will talk to you again next week.
Okay, man. Hey, thanks. I'll see you.
You bet. Sando, he's the best, man. How about that, pulling up all the fourth and sevens for Andy Reid right there while we're on the air. Mike Sando from The Athletic, senior NFL writer. Fantastic NFL insider, always smarter for having talked to Mike Sando. We will take a break. By the way, our Final Four that we did not get to is still brought to you by our friends at the University of Kansas Health System, the official healthcare provider of the Chiefs. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System, guess what? They can see you quickly. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'm going to tell you what you need to know. I'm going to tell you what you need to know.
Our need to know is brought to you by the University of Kansas Health Center. I don't know why I say that all the time. University of Kansas Health System. It's a whole system, people. It's a whole system, including the incredible Sports Performance Center. The Sports Medicine and Performance Center at 125th and Antioch is absolutely fantastic. You need to go check it out. They literally have every piece of technology to make you, one, just get a little bit healthier, or get a lot better at a sport, whether it's golf, whether it's baseball, whatever it is. You got a young athlete, happy to work with them as well. And right now you can give the gift of 25% off. That's right, 25% off. Don't miss this opportunity. Whether it's sports performance classes, personal training, 3D running gait analysis, metabolic performance assessments, the Titleist Performance Institute golf fitness evaluations, plus golf performance training. It is a great, great gift you can give. Think if you got a golfer, instead of, you know, the winner not being able to golf, get in there and make your golf game better by letting the experts at the University of Kansas Health System, their sports performance holiday sale going on right now, let them make your golf game better, get you stronger, better add distance to your drives, get more efficient, just get healthier. It's a great time. Visit kansashealthsystem.com/sportsperformance for more details. Real quick, Mike sent me this. This is what you need to know. He calculated some of the math, did some of the numbers. The Kansas City Chiefs, since 2018, when Patrick Mahomes took over as the quarterback, on down and distances of 4th and 5 to 4th and 7, he says, are just 3 of 9. Does that sound right, Kay?
Not offhand, but
I'm looking at it. Against the Raiders, 4th and 7, they got that was a fake with Townsend. Chad Henne passed short right to Tyreek Hill on 4th and 6. That was converted. 4th and 6, Andrew Wiley reported eligible. I have to look at it.
I bet it is right. It's just an odd collection of plays. You go, I remember that.
You know, he's made every 4th and 8, but 4th and 7 is the right bugaboo. You know, right. I don't think that's what was at the top of Andy Reid's mind, but we'll have to dig more into it. He was fired up to go look at it. He's going to look at it some more. Sando is great at doing the research. He's absolutely fantastic at doing that kind of stuff. So, you know, he's going to be digging in. He's going to come back next week and be like, all right, here it is. Here's everything that happens on fourth down. He's awesome. Shockingly, we're behind. We'll take a break, wrap things up with a kicker.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, a good sense into the hour answer. Who's the Broncos' career receiving leader? It's Missouri Southern's own Rod Smith. Leads in receptions, yards, and touchdowns.
Yeah, that's amazing. You think Shannon Sharpe would be a name?
All right.
Darius Thomas. Out there, but no, the great Rod Smith. Rod Smith,
most
the
of
guy
them
to do it. You're a Rod Smith fan, weren't you?
Yeah. I mean, I was never a Broncos fan, but I appreciated that guy's game.
Yeah. Not bad. Not bad. All right. What are we playing for?
A little good sense.
GoodSenseSubs.com.
So I'm going next.
I could use some good sense. I could use that good sense after a conversation with Mike Sando. I will tell you that right now.
That's fantastic.
Use me a great big 16-inch roast chicken. Get it today. You know the meats and cheeses. They slice it fresh right in front of you. The bread, baked fresh twice each day. party trays, people. You're having everybody over to watch the Chiefs game. Might I recommend the party trays? Absolutely a great spread. In fact, today I'm happy to report that I made a sandwich with some of the leftover veggies that we had this weekend for the party tray we got here at my house, plus the great condiments.